Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, May 6, 2022. 30 political detainees are on hunger strike in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
They are detained without any charges leveled against them, which is a clear violation of the law. And this is regarded as part of enforced disappearance, arbitrary arrest, or unlawful detention.
And three Sudanese traders are accused of allegedly defiling and killing a six-year-old girl in Awil town of northern Bahar El Ghazal state.
The case is open against them according to the crime they committed, and he will be referring to the court and then to being by the judges there. And the investigation finished, and he will be referred to the court.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Nearly 30 Sudanese political detainees in Soba prison south of the country's capital, Khartoum, have gone on strike Thursday, protesting what they call illegal detention. One of the detainees' defense lawyers says the prisoners have entered into a second day of hunger strike and are demanding the authorities to release or charge them in a court of law. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The detained individuals are members of pro-democracy groups and resistance committees who organized protests against the military coup in Sudan. Security agents arrested the activists during the protest on the streets and in their homes. A group of Sudanese lawyers who voluntarily teamed up and called themselves emergency lawyers are offering legal support to the detainees and their families. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum today, lawyer Samira Sheikh Idris, a member of the group, says 27 detainees at Soba prison began a hunger strike yesterday as a means to pressure authorities to release them. Idris says after spending nearly 2 months behind bars, the detainees have yet to be charged.
They are detained without any charges leveled against them, which is a clear violation of the law, and this is regarded as part of enforced disappearance, arbitrary arrest, or unlawful detention. So they should be released or be charged in a court of law after leveling clear charges against them.
Earlier this week, some families of detainees who are members of resistance committees called on Sudanese authorities to release their loved ones. Some of them told this program the detainees are not allowed to be visited by family members, lawyers, or doctors. Idris says authorities should allow the detainees to meet with family members and lawyers in accordance with the law.
The authorities have kept them in detention and prevented anybody from visiting them from their family members or their lawyers. That's why it's difficult to even follow up with them. They don't have any channel of communication with people outside.
Since the October 2021 coup led by Army Commander Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, hundreds of pro-democracy groups and members of resistance committees have been arrested and detained after military leaders declared a state of emergency across the country. Idris says he and other lawyers have urged the military to release the political detainees.
We as emergency lawyers have addressed the judicial system asking for their immediate release, but there was not positive response. They are detained under the state of emergency law, which was issued by head of the Sovereign Council and is to be implemented by the State Security Committee.
Late last week, Sudanese authorities released three female detainees from the Taibad women's prison, where the women were held for nearly a month without charge. No explanation was given for their release. Idris says the volunteer lawyers will not give up in their quest to get the detainees released.
We will continue to pressure the authorities who ordered for the detention of these individuals, being through the public prosecutor, security committee, or the governor, or the administration of the National or the administration of the national security and any other entities.
Last week, a Sudanese court ordered the release of former Sudanese cabinet minister Khalid Omar Youssef and five other political detainees who were charged with different offenses, including dishonesty. The presiding judge said there was not enough evidence to convict them. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
South Sudan's Minister of Finance and Economic Planning says the country's oil has been sold up to 2027, posing challenges to the government's effort to deliver services. The minister told journalists on Thursday that his office cannot promptly pay civil servants' salaries because the finance ministry has no money. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
At a joint news conference on Thursday with the governor of the South Sudan Central Bank, Moses Makur Deng, Achuel said the ministry has to borrow money to pay salaries. The two officials were addressing the media after taking part in the World Bank International Monetary Fund spring meetings in Washington, D.C. Minister Achuel says the money that comes from oil being sold years in advance has been channeled into what he calls government priorities.
So the oil money is going for payment of loans and paying some of the priorities of the government. It is not that the government is sitting on the money and is not paying that, yes. Now we are working very hard. Like now, I'm talking to you. I told my people to prepare 3 months' pay sheets of January, February and March. Where am I going to get the money? If the oil has been sold in advance up to 2027, that means that I will go to 2028. To ask somebody to give me money, it's like that by 2028, he will be given that oil.
Achuel says when he was appointed a finance minister in November last year, he learned that civil servants' salaries for the months of July, August, September, and October were not paid. The minister declined to answer questions regarding the reasons for the repeated delays in paying civil servants' salaries. He also declined to provide details of the oil pre-sales, referring reporters to Ministry of Petroleum.
Now, if I want to pay this salary, I had to get this in advance, somebody to give me money to come and pay this salary, which is that is. And if I don't do that, you people will go on the street. Why is the salary not paid? And if I want to pay, I'll have to borrow. And when I borrow, that means that your oil is being sold in advance. So this is where your money of oil is going.
Dr. Ahmed Morjan, a senior lecturer of economics at the University of Juba, says the decision to pre-sell the country's crude oil plunges the country into more darkness of economic struggle.
If you are an employee and then you are working for an institution, and an institution has given you your salaries for 3 years or 4 years in advance, and you already used the money, you already used all the money, which means you will be working actually for free. And that employee is actually in a dilemma situation. Should anything happen to you, should you die, or you fall sick and you are not able to produce, which means your position in that institution remains vacant, and hence your production in that institution will go to nil. That institution will lose. That is how the country looks like now.
Morjan says he is impressed by the finance minister's decision to be transparent with the public regarding the pre-sale of the country's crude oil. He says selling the country's oil, a national public commodity, for years in advance puts the future of its citizens in jeopardy. He says the statement of the minister may just be the tip of the iceberg regarding the country's financial situation. Morjan says political decisions on the oil sector should be regulated by a law.
The parliament should have to enact a law on how this should be done. It should not be a one-man show or a one-man decision, as sometimes it happens. Because if the decisions are taken by majority, sometimes corruption can be arrested, can be controlled. But if decisions are taken by individuals or a clique, it is likely that individuals becomes more corrupt sometimes.
Achuel says the 2022 World Bank IMF meetings he attended in Washington gave South Sudanese officials an opportunity to share the impact of global shocks on the country's economy, including the COVID-19 pandemic, global financial instability, and climate change. The minister says the international community expects to see the unity government improve its track record on good governance, characterized by proper accountability, transparency, and effective delivery of basic services before it considers lifting sanctions placed on South Sudan and some of its officials accused of obstructing reconciliation efforts in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Police in the northern Bahar al-Ghazal state capital Awil are interrogating three Sudanese traders for allegedly defiling and killing a six-year-old girl this week. Residents of Awil town went on rampage for 2 days, bringing businesses to a standstill. The police commissioner in northern Bahar al-Ghazal state says the suspects will be charged with defilement and murder. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
The police commissioner for northern Bahar al-Ghazal state, Brigadier General Philip Madwot, says the three Sudanese traders have been arrested and are being investigated for defilement and murder in connection with the death of the six-year-old girl.
The case is open against them according to the crime they committed, and we will be referring to the court and then it is being decided by the judges there. And investigation finished, then we will refer it to the court. I think it will finish even about 72 hours because by now the rest of the witnesses are now in the funeral. Yeah, we are waiting for them. They come tomorrow. Then they will get them. The case is decided in the court immediately.
Gerald Madwot says the young girl was sexually assaulted and mutilated before her body was dumped in a pit latrine in a young residential area.
So the people were very angry, but we say no, you cannot take the law with your hand. We leave it to the court. So the court, they want to make decisions for them, according to the evidence in the court. Yeah, now traders were coming to the market, they are opening their shops. But those smaller boys now, they are just telling them not to continue these attacks. Up to now, this morning, the situation is calm and normal.
Gerald Madwot says a group of angry youth stormed the market in protest of the incident on Wednesday, bringing business to a standstill. He says the police have contained the situation and the market has reopened. He says some of the young people who tried to attack Sudanese traders in Awil were arrested but later freed. Northern Bahar al-Ghazal authorities say one of the arrested Sudanese traders lived with the victim within the same compound where the crime was reportedly committed. Gerald Madwot says the same trader was previously warned after he attempted to sexually assault another girl several months ago. In February this year, the High Court in Juba sentenced 27-year-old Amos Pitia Inri to death for defiling and killing a 13-year-old girl in the High Cinema residential area in 2020. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we look at gender wage gap, inequality and discrimination in the place of work. Stay tuned for that story after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. An international labor organization survey in 8 countries finds collective bargaining agreements and practices critical to improving working conditions, closing the gender wage gap, and reducing inequality and discrimination in the place of work. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report finds one-third or 1 in 3 workers around the world benefits from collective bargaining agreements negotiated between trade unions and employers. One of the more dramatic examples of that is the crucial role collective bargaining has played in mitigating the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on employment and earnings. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says the negotiating parties arrived at solutions that proved critical in protecting workers on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. He says those solutions have proved crucial in preserving essential health care, social care, and other services.
Secondly, collective bargaining helped prevent the spread of COVID-19 in the workplace through paid sick leave provision and the joint oversight of workplace safety and health during successive lockdowns and workplace returns. And thirdly, and as with previous crises, collective bargaining helped save jobs, protect earnings, and safeguard business continuity.
Much attention recently has been given to efforts to unionize corporate giants Amazon and Starbucks in the United States. However, the ILO report highlights the important role collective bargaining plays in developing as well as developed countries. Lead author of the ILO report, Susan Hayter, says 57 of the agreements reviewed were in African countries. She says country studies found that collective bargaining in those countries is as effective, if not in some ways more effective, than in developed countries.
Let me just take the example of Sierra Leone, where we did not have the employment retention measures that perhaps other countries in Europe had. And the parties sat down at the bargaining table and really sought to find a way to ensure that, and this is in tourism, that workers were able to come in on a rotational basis, given the lockdown, so that all workers could at least get some income.
Authors of the ILO report say collective bargaining will be an essential tool to face the fundamental changes that are shaking up the world of work. They call the process a powerful problem-solving tool, which can be used for the benefit of workers and employers alike. Rather than being a controversial issue, they say collective bargaining should be used as a public good. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We'd love to hear your remarks on some of the issues in this program. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We heard from a number of you about the importance of a free press following our news coverage on World Press Freedom Day, such as Mala Daumal in Bortown, who writes, "Hello, VOA. Our security personnel should understand that arbitrary arrests of journalists across the country is not a hideout for their failure. We eagerly await information on what is happening in the country on a daily basis through journalists. There should be freedom of the press, but not freedom of the law to arrest them." Samuel Romo says, "Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Journalists should not be afraid of what they are doing in covering the news because all of us worldwide use information to help us make decisions. Information includes facts, ideas, and concepts that help us understand the world." Kondaki Ibrahim from southern Kordofan state in Sudan says, "Hello, VOA team. I thank you for making the voice of the voiceless be heard throughout the globe. And I urge the international community to intervene into Pastor Estefano's case, who is now judged by the Khartoum government just because he was praising God in a loud voice during Palm Sunday." Jacob Dior Matueng from Ural in Lake State says, "Dear VOA, it was shocking news when I heard about the disappearance of Agwil Chudeng, which resulted in her passing on in Australia. Agwil was an example of women leaders and resilience in this country. From the struggle of Anyanwatu to independence, she showed many people that what men can do, women can do too. She died a heroine. The country and those who have been in touch with her, including me, will always have her in mind. May her beautiful soul rest in peace." Martin Manuel Wugol in Numuli says, Hello, John and Nabil. I would like to encourage South Sudanese citizens to value agriculture as the only way to fight food insecurity in a rich agricultural country like South Sudan, where anything can be produced so long as it's cultivated by the farmers. I wish you a happy weekend. Mabor Aladrengo in Rubeg in Lakeset says, hello VOA, the incident that happened in Awil, northern Bahr Ghazal state, whereby a 60-year-old Sudanese trader raped and killed a 6-year-old girl and dumped her into a pit latrine is an inhuman act. We are calling for justice to prevail to apprehend that person. The community of Awil should remain calm and leave this matter in the government's hands. Garkwat Manong Chuang Kujik from Juba's POC site says, I quote President Kiir's speech during last year's peace conference between Jonglei and Greater Bibor Administrative Area. He said if any fighting breaks out again between Murle and Dinkabor, his government will never send any forces to the area. He added that the small army that remains is for his protection. Saber Isaac Khamis from Yambio in Western Equatoria State writes, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. The Bibor and Bor intercommunal conflict is getting out of hand. The government needs to think outside the box in dealing with the matter. The possible solution is reunite Bibor and Jonglei as one state. The two states can't live separately. Creation of the administrative area for Bibor was the wrong idea. The best thing to do is to unify the state. Give it one government with power sharing. John Inumuli Mugali Payam of Bagiri County in Eastern Equatoria State says, the bleeding of 3 civilians were confirmed killed by cattle herders and many are displaced in Numuli town. The solution with these cattle herders is over to you, the commissioner. Protect your citizens. Rest in peace to the victims. Tong Chuni Yong Kwai from Juba says, happy Eid to all South Sudanese Muslim communities in the country and outside the country. James Roy Majok from Bantu Town in Unity State says, hi Nabil and John Tanza Mabusu. Happy Eid al-Fitr to all Muslims across the globe, despite the things that are not going well in South Sudan due to insecurity. Thomas Kuntod in Old Fangak Payam of Jonglei State writes, hello VOA South Sudan in Focus. The measles epidemic in Warab State needs an urgent response from the nation's Minister of Health of South Sudan because measles is contagious. It can spread rapidly all over South Sudan if not well managed. It kills children mostly under 5 years old and it is a totally preventable disease with vaccination. Community awareness and sensitization toward immunization may eradicate the measles epidemic in South Sudan. May God help the nation. Ustaz Loboy Kalaman Joseph of Torid in Eastern Equatoria State says, dear John and Nabil, there are good reasons always to commemorate International World Labor Day to improve the working conditions of civil servants, especially those of teachers who are shedding silent tears and longing to make their family members happy. Our government should heavily invest in education by building the capacity of teachers because they are the real agents of peace and development, thus the typical builders of this nation. Wilson Rio Garang in Awil says, hi John Taza, my warmest greetings to you and your colleagues in the studio. My question to our leaders is, do our leaders care about the suffering of the civil population in the country? I wonder every time I hear that the graduation of the armed forces is yet to be completed. This alone is a signal to the civil population that the leaders of this country did not want to accelerate the completion of all provisions in the revitalized peace agreement for a lasting peace to prevail. If they want us to enjoy peace, let them do the will of our people. Nothing beyond this is expected from them. And Guya Moses John from the Bidibidi Refugee Settlement in Uganda writes, hi VOA News, South Sudan in Focus. A good move was taken by the government of South Sudan to construct the Yei Kaya Road and Yei Juba Road, but a lot of destruction is made to mangoes and other fruit trees. Thanks for letting us know what you think. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of this program or of VOA. We enjoy hearing from you. Keep those comments coming.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This year is likely to be the most food insecure year on record globally, according to the United Nations. Much of the suffering is caused by conflict, said U.S. representative to the UN Economic and Social Council, Lisa Carty.
More and more, belligerents are intentionally destroying farms or blocking trade routes with the express purpose of causing people to starve.
Russia is using these tactics as part of its war on Ukraine, and the repercussions are already being felt by the world's most vulnerable, said Ambassador Carty.
Ukraine is the world's fifth largest exporter of wheat and the second largest exporter of sunflower oil. Russia has disrupted these staple crops by bombing civilian infrastructure, placing landmines in Ukrainian soil, and even deliberately and repeatedly damaging Ukrainian grain storage facilities, six by our latest count. And Russia's blockade of Ukrainian ports is stopping what food Ukraine has left from being exported to other countries in dire need.
It is not surprising that Russia's war of choice is having a devastating impact on food systems at every level, from global to local, and the consequences will be dire. Regions that are already food insecure are now more likely to tip into catastrophic famine, starvation, and death as food prices rise.
In Yemen, the number of people facing famine is projected to increase fivefold by June. And that was a projection before Russia's war of choice began to affect food prices. In Ethiopia, as many as 9 million people face severe food insecurity. In Tigray specifically, more than 90% of people need aid. In South Sudan, conflict has driven two famines in the last 5 years, and analysts are warning another one could occur in 2022. And in Syria, about 12 million people are experiencing acute food insecurity.
These crises are not inevitable. In fact, we have seen how taking early and anticipatory action has helped prevent famine, said Ambassador Carty. For our part, the United States will continue to deliver life-saving assistance through USAID and Feed the Future. We will continue to be the single largest country donor to the World Food Program and the Food and Agriculture Organization, she said. We can save lives if we act early, before the worst crisis impacts are felt. There can be no excuse for famine today.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
That's all we prepare for you. This Friday, we now end this show with JJD Muzika and the song Sahida.
Evangelio Anna Maria Sahida
Habibi, isimu Sayida, isimu sukeri wa usajemi Kia jamani kigeni, kijuba muhabatani na bada bitarabama
Itakante milangu se
Habibi, isimu Sayida, isimu sukeri wa usajemi Kia jamani kigeni, kijuba muhabatani na bada bitarabama
Koroji, koromona, fekiri ya jama
Nina geni muda tasaba sena Alabari kunina matrimania Hiya kumusafiri pikare tumu Nakadi hasa Hiya marija
Malu jete ya mama
Nina geni muda tasaba sena Alabari kunina matrimania Hiya kumusafiri pikare tumu Nakadi hasa Hiya marija
Sol bira kwa mumaria asan biriza pibebe Manu jede Seida Ita nesitu
Ia asata walindala sasena Telefunu wele waraga mafi Ia lipe asadu mama wenu usu alide Anabijua kukevi Ia asata walindala sasena Telefunu wele waraga mafi Ia lipa asadu mama
Seida, Feki Koromula, Makoretik, Feki Iyal, Feki Muhabatena Pibidaya.
We have been listening to JJD Muzika and the song Saida. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
le grand maître Oustas Joseph Lacou. Asuma Kwesi.